The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. It's so good to be with you today. We got a mixed bag for you. Thanks for joining me and thanks for allowing me to be part of your afternoon. If you want to join the conversation at any time, I'm going to give you the number here. It's 888-914-9149. We're going to mix it up a little bit today. Peter Grandage is going to be stopping by a little bit earlier, and we'll take a look at some news. But before I get to him, I just want to touch very quickly, bring you up to speed on a story that I will dive into in much greater detail next week. I'm not going to do that today. We'll take a look at the future of marijuana in this country. And there was a big vote today. A lot of people were looking at to see what the future held on a federal level for cannabis, for pot, for weed, for marijuana, whatever you want to call it. The House actually voted. They passed legislation that would remove marijuana from the federal schedule of controlled substances. And that's a move that comes as a number of states across the union have decriminalized. They've passed decriminalization laws. And this House measure, it was House measure, House Resolution, H.R. 3617, if you want to take a look at it. It's known as the Marijuana Opportunity Reinvestment and Expungement Act. And the way the easy way to remember is called the MORE Act, the M-O-R-E Act. And look, the House passed similar legislation, you might remember, back in December. I think it was 2020, but it was not brought up for a vote in the Senate, which was controlled by Republicans at the time. And today's vote was close. It was split really right down the middle. It was down partisan lines, 220 to 204. Only three Republicans joined Democrats to back the legislation. And then two Democrats, they said no. They joined the Republicans in that. So it remains unclear at this point in time what the future of this will be. I don't know whether it will receive enough votes in the Senate. The White House has not yet issued a statement on whether President Biden supports the legislation. But Chuck Schumer was out today, and he says, hey, you know, the time's come. The time has come for comprehensive reform of federal cannabis laws. And, of course, you know, they need Republicans to pass the legislation. So he says they're going to work hard to try to get them. Attitudes have changed with marijuana. You probably have seen this the past decade, just in the last 10 years or so. There's been a very significant shift in public attitudes towards weed. A handful of states, of course, changed their laws. The National Conference of State Legislatures, 37 states, and the District of Columbia have now legalized medical marijuana use. 18 states in the district allow non-medical use. And, you know, believe it or not, just from an economic perspective, the drug has become a job creator, with legal cannabis sales totaling $19 billion in 2020. And they're expected in just a couple years, by 2025, to go as high as, you know, $41 billion. I know a lot of people have bought some of these cannabis stocks. So, you know, they're camping out hoping that will indeed be the case. But on Monday, we'll dive into it in greater detail. I want to look at the ethics behind this. Is marijuana different than alcohol? Is it okay to smoke, even if it's legal? You know, when it's illegal, well, then there are certain moral parameters. But what happens if it's legal? Also, the physiological, psychological effects of it. Is it good for you or is it bad for you? We'll break it all down on Monday. In other news today, the jobless claims are in, gas prices are up, and there's a lot to talk about. It, believe it or not, March is almost over. Can you believe that? And it is over. This is the first day of April. You know, normally I do a big April Fool's joke on somebody during this day. I was trying to think what I could pull on my wife. Maybe we'll talk about it later. Maybe you can give me some ideas. So far, haven't done a thing. It's amazing we're in April already. I don't know where the time has gone. For the last week ending, I guess, March 26, the jobless claim numbers, you know, there was a slight increase from the previous week. And it really underscores how far, I guess, the job market has recovered from the same week, really, a year ago, if you look at that. Peter Grandage is going to be joining me. You know him. He's the Wall Street whiz kid. And we'll get his take on jobs, on gas, on the economy. I do want to talk to him about a great loss that he suffered as well. But let me just share with you right now a report from CNBC. They took a look at the March job numbers, and they came out. And we'll give you a look at where the numbers are. Take a listen.
431,000 on non-farm payrolls. It's a bit of a miss. We're looking for a number closer to 500,000. Private payrolls, 426,000. Also a miss, looking for a number close to 500,000. Change in manufacturing payrolls, a little better at 38,000. That follows 36,000, but I shudder to go in the rearview mirror. They'll probably see some revisions there. The unemployment rate, a new low, 3.6%. 3.6%. We all know pre-COVID, that was 3.1% in February of 2020, getting ever closer.
So let's look at it, all right? 431 jobs employers added in March. Here to give us some perspective on this, and of course, take your calls, your questions, and take a look at all that's happening in the world of economics and the markets is Peter Grandage, the Wall Street Whiz Kid. And you can check him out here and read his book as well. Hey, Peter, good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Thanks for being here. So what do you make of the job numbers? You kind of expected this, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, we're getting back. We're still a few million short to be back to pre-COVID levels. So from that standpoint, you can't deny that it's good to see that. The problem is you have to ask yourself, do you think things are as good, better, or worse economically, politically, and socially than it was before COVID hit? Obviously, I come up thinking things are far worse on all three levels. So while it's good to see the employment, there's a whole host of issues now that have come out of the woodwork, from geopolitical to all sorts of problems with inflation, a Fed that realistically no longer can count on monetary heroin to just move the stock market forward without having any troubles coming from that. So, yeah, I like to see, you know, people working. I know what it is for people to not be working, but even with the workforce that we have, between the inflation cost and other difficulties, people struggle more now to stay afloat, let alone try to make go forward. And so the separation between the people who have done well the last couple years and the people that have gone sideways to down has never been greater. And you only have to see that by talking anywhere in the United States to any group that provides food and other services. They will tell you that the number of people are not only increasing, but the working class people that now need to come for that support is dramatically increasing.
That's really true. You know, I was watching a report earlier today, too. We've got inflation at, 7.9% right now. It's probably going to go up even higher. Gas prices going through the roof. It's something that I have not talked about, but I want your take on it. I was curious about this. You know, there's been some talk about all these sanctions that we're now putting on Russia. And I saw a headline earlier today that mentioned the IMF, I'm pretty sure it was IMF, who was saying, hey, these sanctions against Russia, they can threaten the strength of the dollar. They may weaken dominance of the U.S. dollar. Explain that, and what do you see for the future of the dollar? We have got our own economic issues here going on, but on a global scale, when you take a look at what's happening geopolitically, I wonder what the future, you know, because I'm sure China and Russia don't want to be caught in what happened. The ruble's worth like nothing. Your view of the future of the dollar and what we might see in the not too distant future.
Well, you and I've had this discussion in the past. I'm not alone in this. I think there's an increasing belief that sooner rather than later, there will be an alternative to the U.S. dollar. The very fact that central banks around the world, whether it's Russia, China, or even some of the Western world ones, have not only greatly increased their gold holdings, with the suspect that eventually when the fiat paper goes bust, when people realize you just can't keep printing it the way the United States has without some sort of price being paid, whether it's inflation and other issues, that there needs to be an alternative, and that alternative is going to have some sort of backing for people to have faith in it. We've already seen on an increasing number of limited regional areas where countries are now trading with each other, not using the dollar. And this situation probably accelerated a movement towards that. I think the other issue that a lot of people have not focused on, because it's such a dire thing to see on the news 24/7, the loss of life, the loss of just all normal life, buildings being destroyed, lives being destroyed, is that the ironicness is that less than 2 years ago, the United States was energy self-sufficient. It literally was exporting more energy than it was taking in. And I'm not getting into the political, whether Trump was right and Biden is wrong, but in a very short span. And then you look at in Europe, where we're asking our so-called allies to go against the very country that they're dependent on getting their energy needs from. And, you know, this is something, and again, I'm not here to support Trump, but this is something that Trump argued during his presidency that was asinine, that we're spending all this money. We want the United States is spending even more than those countries to get NATO going, and you guys are the guys that you were spending the money to defend against, you're dependent on them to provide you your energy. It just doesn't make sense. And so one of the big things that's going to come out of this is that countries are looking around the world and recognizing that energy and all this green talk and suddenly just doing away with oil and not depending on it might have been a big error. And here we are in the United States. We have certainly an excess amount of natural gas. There's no question that we could be self-sufficient for quite a period on that time, but there's still needs for energy. But also we're still fighting the trend, which around the world has changed dramatically, and that's nuclear energy. And of course, those things don't happen overnight. They're going to take several years. And at a time when our system of providing energy in the United States is so archaic that I like to joke that some of the tools that are out there still were installed by Thomas Edison. I mean, people do not understand that you can't ask for all these electrical cars, all this movement to EV and ESG and all that type of stuff, and yet the ability to deliver it, we're seeing, you know, state of California saying that they have to have brownouts because they just can't meet the increased demand for people now charging their cars. So there's a whole host of problems that the war, unfortunately, I think, brought to the surface that were always there but was not being seen by everyone. And now, of course, we're trying to fix a problem that has occurred for a while and fix it overnight, and it's just not going to work out that way.
My guest is Peter Grandage. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. Number here is 888-914-9149. I'll go to the calls in just a minute. I could not agree with you more, especially on the energy issue. When I see the IMF warning that sanctions may weaken the dominance of the dollar, it makes me think of a conversation we've had too many times, and that's about the future of crypto in this country. I guess whoever was addressing this, I forget the IMS deputy managing director, I think it was a woman who was saying that it's going to ultimately spur the adoption of digital finance, from cryptocurrencies to stable coins to central bank digital currencies. Is that the future? You know, I mean, I know gold is one thing, but when you see this happening on an international scale, you think nations like China and Russia and other countries will move towards cryptocurrencies.
Well, I don't want you to confuse digital currency with things like Bitcoin. There is a significant difference in that. And I don't ever believe that something. First of all, I believe if you are going to look at cryptocurrencies, there's much better technology has improved greatly in that industry, and there's much better ones than Bitcoin. Okay, it's just that Bitcoin was around for a while, a lot longer than the others. It was easy because there wasn't a lot of people that owned it, so it went up a lot, and everybody looks at those gains. But if you really look what it's done in the last 12 or 18 months, it really is underperformed. But I think what's more important is, you know, are we moving to digital currency? In other words, are we going to move away from paper? You know, everything is not going to have a paper or an actual regular physical coin. I think that's more of where you're going. But make no mistake about it, if you're going to have a world change, the amount of money that would have to be supported back by something is not remotely met by cryptocurrencies. And that's why many of us still that have been around the block not you know, some young folks who just last few years ago, their biggest mathematical problem was algebra in high school, and now they're giving out advice on the internet as if they know everything that you need to know. I think that's the big mistake. I still think central banks are going to be influential in what happens in the changes, and they own too much gold that to make right. it that gold suddenly is not going to be part of it.
I'm with you. So you can see those central bank digital currencies being a thing.
Yeah, and that's not to say that cryptocurrencies are going to go away. I'm not in that camp. I do think that they were part of mm-hmm. this ultimate asset bubble of all time, and you know they have to go through a shakeout the same way the internet stocks did, you know, 20 something years ago. I think they're here to stay, but I think in the way and the manner that people sell it, and the gains that they still talk about that they have coming in front of them, I think are way out of line.
Right. One final financial thing here, too. We can grab a couple calls for you, but and I do want to talk about something personal with you. The legalization of marijuana, the big story today that I shared, you know, of course, the House passed that decriminalizing marijuana. Of course, we'll see what happens in the Senate. The future, that's unclear. But, you know, big tobacco, a lot of people have invested in the future of this, and it may be an inevitability. It may come. What do you see in terms of the future of marijuana in this country, and of course the economic tangent that is associated with that? Are the people going to be investing heavier in these types of stocks? Is it an area to make money? Is it unethical to do this? How do you view it?
Well, I think it's here to stay. I'm not a believer in it. I don't use it. I don't believe I will ever use it. If I got really sick and somebody said somehow it could help me in that regard, I guess I would consider it. But it's definitely past the stage of being something, a fly by night. It's become a standard for a lot of people. Like you said, also, a lot of money has been invested in it, alternatives to tobacco and so forth and so on. So I think it's pretty well here, but it's all part of a move away from a lot of things that us, those I presume many are listening, are good Catholic Christians, are moving away from high grounds to things that ordinarily our parents or our grandparents could have never imagined. Just real quick, you know, I can't imagine my father-in-law and mother-in-law, my wife was born and raised in Ireland, to think in the span of less than one generation that Ireland would have gay marriage, abortion, and divorce. I mean, something that was just 20 years, 25 years ago couldn't be imagined. So we are not just here in the United States, but we're changing all the way around the world in a lot of manners on things that maybe us as Catholic Christians, you know, have a struggle with. And my job is, yeah, in one way is still to give out advice, but as you know, I wear my Catholic Christian my faith on my sleeve, and I don't believe you can separate them. So I will never personally invest in it or support it.
All right, well said. My guest, Peter Grandis. Peter, let's grab a few calls. Teresa's listening in Covina, California. Hi, Teresa.
Thank you, and praise God, and I love Relevant Radio and blessings. Okay, I'd like to also, okay, first of all, my son is a union electrician, and he has told me that when somebody's been using pot, he knows it, like within the last 24 hours, and he will make sure to assign that person to a safer job. Okay, my question is, he just told me that the industry is slowing down. They don't have faith in starting new constructions because of, we'll just say, the environment, the situation. His son, who was an apprentice, is out of work. And before, he was working like umpteen hours a day. So what is your estimate about, you know, will we get confidence in this, you know, in our president? And by the way, they did vote for Biden.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Teresa. I guess her question there.
I'm not sure what the question is, Drew, so if you want to.
I think she was just simply saying it was.
Do you think things will open up, you know, because they have slowed down and starting new jobs?
Okay. Did you get that, Peter?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear it, Drew. Could you just repeat it?
She just wants to know the future of the job market. She's worried that it's slowing down.
I thought it was tied to somehow with, okay. Yeah, I think we're seeing, you know, remember, we're getting back to pre-COVID in terms of the amount of jobs, but actual new jobs, we're still several million away. And let's not forget, we've had a lot of people continue, you know, to leave the labor force. So the difficulty is, the difference is now we have an issue of where interest rates are 1 and 2 or 3% and inflation 6, 7, 8, or 9%. So as I told you, as I said last year, not only did I get out of equities, but I said to you that I thought bonds would actually be a poorer performer because there people believe safe a principle, and I said that there'd be double-digit losses. Well, if inflation stays at 6 or 7% past the next few months, interest rates are pretty well going to have to move closer to that. You can't keep that discrepancy. And the Fed is caught now because it has a lot more problems than it has before, including geopolitical. And, you know, this food inflation is probably worse than the energy inflation because that is where we're really seeing dramatic increases to the point of farmers can't even afford to, you know, to go and plant because of the cost of fertilization, and then areas of the world where they're not as wealthy are just, you know, getting to the point where there could be truly tremendous food shortages. So there's a whole host of issues that didn't exist 2 years ago that do now, and we haven't even talked about the coming huge political issue of the Bidens themselves and his son, and quite frankly, the scariest thing of all is, God forbid, Biden had to leave as president, whether it was health issues or other. It's clear to me, and I think it'd be the biggest problem that the market ever faced if suddenly we were calling President Harris as president. There, I would just think that there would be unbelievable shockwaves economically, socially, and politically.
It'd also be interesting to see geopolitically what happens internationally with other powers, how they would test her. You know, we already see that with this administration. But, you know, the chain of command goes to the vice president. It would be Kamala Harris if something happened to Joe Biden. I pray for him every day. I pray God sustains him, converts him, helps him. And if something was to happen to Kamala Harris, then it goes to the Speaker of the House, who would be Nancy Pelosi. You can imagine Nancy Pelosi as the president. So very interesting lineup we have here for the next couple of years. Peter, let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls. And I want to talk to you about your good friend, okay? My guest today, Peter Grandage. You got a lot to talk about. You're more than welcome to join us. Pull up a chair. The number here is 888-914-9149. Taking a look at what's happening in the world, finance, and your life. Back with more. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the issues, one place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Great to be with you today. My guest, Peter Grandage, the Wall Street whiz kid, or in his humility, he likes to call himself the former Wall Street whiz kid. He's got a great story, one of success, making millions of dollars and then losing it, and making it again and losing it, and battling depression. And ultimately, his life is a story of great conversion, and his faith has really sustained him. And today, his heart really is in mixing both finance with faith. You know, he believes in that very much, a big proponent of tithing and the spiritual principles that will ultimately be judged on. It's not about how many zeros follow the number that's in your bank account, right? It's not how much wealth you can acquire, because no matter how much you have, you'll never find complete happiness if you don't have God. And Peter understands that. It's good to have him with me today. He suffered a loss, and I do want to talk to him a little bit about that as well. But Peter, let's just grab a call or two here, and then we'll change gears. Roy's been waiting. He's in Madison, and big fan of Relevant Radio. Roy, it's always good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Hello, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. And gee whiz, I get to talk to the whiz kid. I'm so thrilled.
I love it.
Yeah, my question's this. I'm an old Christian conservative, as you know, but I sort of believe a little bit in this global warming and the climate and all this kind of stuff. When you see the picture stuff. Okay, should we do electric and cut down on carbon emissions, all this stuff? My thought is, why don't they come together, the big shots of all the countries and stuff, and do it in a controlled plan over, not just try to flip the switch and have us all buy electric cars tomorrow. Can't they do it over decades or centuries, Drew, as a worldwide thing, so it's an ease off that stuff, ease on to? What's your thoughts or his
Thoughts, I'll let Peter share his as well. I'm with you, Roy. I think we share the same view, and I think a lot of people are coming to that realization. Look, the popes have been clear on this. I mean, St. John Paul II spoke about this. We have to be good stewards of the planet that God has given us. There's no doubt about it. But to flip the switch right now at a time when our national security is tied to energy, when the economy is profoundly impacted, and many people are suffering, to worship at the altar of the Green New Deal or the environment, that's a problem. And my personal take is, I think we need to make a slow transition. But what we're seeing right now, I don't think is good for the future of America or its people, and it will take time. There's a lot of other people who aren't on board. Take a look at China. Take a look at take a look at Russia. Take a look at some of these other nations that are. I mean, China right now, Peter, and you can probably speak to this better than I can. They're going into coal big time. But your thoughts too, Peter. I'll let you sound off with Roy in terms of our duty to be good stewards of the environment, and yet how this really impacts both national security and the economy.
Well, I think that's. At the end of the day, if you ask the average American, at least, those are the first two concerns they have, the economy and national security. And as I said it there, as we started, it was just a couple of years ago when we were energy independent. And we've had a dramatic change in that. And, the choices that were made, and now you have to deal with it. The issue of which people have not come to grips with, that even if what the so-called green people are moving towards, the ability to do it, not only in a matter timely, is the ability to provide things that go along with it. There are a whole host of metals, strategic metals and others, that are required if you're going to move from one type of, from fossil fuel to another, that we have no real reserves of. And ironically, where are they again? They're in places like China and all, where we may not be in the best of relationships with. So there's a lot of great talk, and sure, there's concern, and I think environments are concerns. But, we've also had a place where supposedly the world was supposed to work out these things. It's called the United Nations, but they tends to be more politicized there than really people working together. So I just think that what will have to happen is we'll have to get to dire, situations. People tend to only take the real necessary actions when finally things become very dire. And, that's unfortunately where I think we're heading for.
All right. Frank is listening in Olympia Field, Illinois. Frank, good afternoon. Thanks, Roy.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
All right.
Anyway, the question I had was, we know that the Feds are going to have to raise interest rates, and of course that's going to have a negative effect on the market. Matter of fact, I think it's going to crash. I wanted to get your take on that. And also, would gold and silver be a good investment, do you think, at this time?
Well, the only thing I can tell, which has been known for quite some time, is last year for myself, and that's what I share. I share what I'm doing, and if people feel they have similar needs as I do, then they can listen to it. I didn't want to own any equities or bonds by the end of last year. I did put a large sum of my money into gold and silver, not just for capital appreciation, but because I feel, as I stated earlier, especially gold will be used in some new monetary formula that will have to come about when eventually you cannot continue as the United States has in the amount of debt that we have. And I'll just simplify it again. We have over $30 trillion of hard debt that we owe, not counting what we expect to pay people in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Wow. Even if interest rates go just back to 5%, and we have to pay $1.5 trillion in interest on that debt, we only took in our best year, 2019, a little over $3 trillion in tax income. So almost half of our income will go just to pay interest on the national debt. It's not sustainable. Whether I pay for it at my late age, be 66 tomorrow, my child who's 30, or if she is to have a child, someone down the road is going to pay a very dear price for the way we have built up our debt level. And, you know, you can only kick the can so far. It gets heavier and heavier. And the political will now in Washington doesn't exist. So if and when we have another crisis of like we had in 2008, I don't think the parties this time could even work out, you know, a program that at least got us back on track, even though it wasn't the perfect answer.
Hey, Frank, thank you. I'm sure you're not alone. A lot of people thinking the same thing. Let me stick one last call in here for you. Peter, at least, I do want to get to your story, too. But David's listening in Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, David.
Hi. So I'm 19 years old. I'm a university student. And I'd like to think I'm kind of smart and savvy with my money. And like you said, like, I think we're in a bubble. Like, the 10-2-year curve just inverted. And I've listened to this philanthropist and billionaire, Michael Saylor, who explained Bitcoin. And I've just been saving in Bitcoin, and I think the new monetary standard that you were just talking about that we could undergo might even be a Bitcoin standard. And I just wanted to get your view on Bitcoin.
Well, let me just answer this way. You're not going to like it, and it's not personal. It's just one man's opinion. Michael Saylor, who has a very questionable background, has advocated to people to not only sell everything, borrow as much as you can, and put it into just one cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. And I can just tell you, in the 80s and 90s, many people were thrown out of the penny stock business for doing far less than that. So I have no time, nor would I ever listen to anybody that would offer such advice, even if he was advocating that for gold. So I am the last person that you'll ever hear anything supportive to be said about Michael Saylor. So I'm sorry that you had to hear that. But like I said earlier, I do believe cryptocurrencies are here to stay, but I do believe that they became very overpriced, caught up in the bubble, and the inevitable correction has begun. And when the market works its way lower, which I think it will over time, so will most of them. And then at that point, there'll be a great shakeout. And those that survive, just like the Amazons and Facebook did of the Internet shakeout, will become giant companies. I just don't know which ones they'll be, and it's too early to make a guess.
So, Peter, just personally, do you think the market has hit its high, and now we're going to be seeing a new normal, much lower?
I do. You know, we saw just detrimental losses in the technology area. Again, we saw so many stocks down 50, 80% this first quarter. Again, that tends to be individual investors. That doesn't tend to be the large people. I think what we've had is we've had a very strong counter-trend rally, or what people want to call it, a bear market rally. And now I think we'll work sideways to lower. I don't think there's going to be suddenly when we're down 30 or 40% again. Mm-hmm. But the unknown, this is the one. The unknown is what is happening politically, both with the president, his son, and of course, if he had to not be president, what that would mean. That is the scariest thing that I've known in my 38 years in and around Wall Street.
Wow. Well, you and I, we should talk about that in greater detail, maybe in the weeks ahead. That is really something to think about. If there was a shakeup and power was changed, what would that mean for the future, both of the market and the world and the economy as well? Peter, on another note, I follow you. I know I get your emails. I know a lot of people are plugged into you as well. You recently lost somebody very close to you, and I know it hit you very hard. My condolences. As you know, my producer Tom just lost his daughter, Regina. She passed away yesterday, and he's going through a very difficult time. And loss is something that pierces the heart. It stings in a particular way. Did you mind maybe sharing a little bit of what you've shared publicly and what you've gone through, and just give us your take on how you're dealing with this both spiritually and personally?
Well, first of all, I only learned, as you just said a few minutes ago, about Tom, so my deepest sympathy to Tom, and it's somewhat ironic because it was Tom who actually met my friend Bill Wagner almost 20-something years ago and helped write my friend Bill Wagner's book. And it was Tom who then suggested Relevant Radio to me and had me speak to you. And despite you being a closet Philadelphia Eagles fan, I still came on, And here are 20, whatever, how many years we've been doing this. But my friend Bill Wagner was something not often found in the Catholic community. He was a full-time Catholic lay evangelist. Our Protestant brethren have thousands upon thousands non-clergy devoting, you know, going around literally the world sharing their faith. But there aren't that many. Perhaps the best known is Ralph Martin, but my friend for over 25 years, my dearest friend, Bill Wagner, did that. And Bill was the only human being that I'd known. I don't know you well enough, Drew, other than our speaking, so I can't say whether you fit this mold. But anybody that I knew past, you know, an interview or something, he's the only person that only spoke about the Sermon on the Mount, but he actually lived it. And on his tombstone, there should only be one word, and it should be forgiveness. And it was very hard for me to accept that. He wrote the foreword to my book. He was there, as you share, and we've talked about in the past, in my darkest hours. And he would always speak to people about forgiveness, something to this day which is still very difficult and at times impossible for me to do. And I used to joke and say that I never even got to the bracelet, what would Jesus say or do, because I had what would Bill Wagner say or do. And I knew what he was going to tell me. He was my great counselor, both business and personally. And I had no comprehension in my mind of his passing. And he was a man that just turned 73, but he was never really ill. And so the shock of hearing in the morning and passing in his sleep, and then learning from our Monsignor that both him and his wife had then have for 10 years prayed for a happy death, and be shared that there's scripture, especially in the Old Testament, that it's a gift to die in your sleep. And but when you have someone, you know, and ironically, his last talk would be at an event I had just a few days before his sudden passing, and all he spoke about there was about how people need to be prepared, that, you know, we're basically here today, could be gone tomorrow, and what we need to do. And I got three emails from people that attended this event that I didn't know beforehand, two of which saying they hadn't been to church or confession in years and were heading back because of what he spoke. And then a few days later, he passed. So it was an honor, and I don't want to cry on the air, and certainly after learning of Tom's loss of his daughter. But I think one of the things that I'm learning here in this, all of this, is that death is part of life. And if we really believe, not just when it's easy to say it and do it, but if we really believe this isn't our final place and what we live for and the teachings that we're taught, now more than ever, I pray to God that they're right, because not that I'm going to see my friend on a golf course or something like that again, but if spiritually somehow I could be reunited with him sometime in the future, even if it's hundreds of years from now, I would give everything right now to do it. That's how our dear friend he was. And he devoted, and he taught me, and it was him that, believe it or not, Drew, you know, you and I've had these discussions. I know you don't mind me sharing this.
No, it was a
struggle these last 10 or 15 years to put my Catholic Christian faith in front of my business life and attach it to my business life. More people walked out a door than came in a door because of that. And then when you start talking about things that less is more, and, you know, you start pointing out the difficulties that are out there with economies and things, it wasn't a business winner, but I wouldn't change it for all, you know, everything in the world. And as I've always told you, and if I can just say one last thing to make my friend's life so worthy, I again encourage everyone listening, the greatest financial book in the world is sitting in most of your houses. It's called the Holy Bible. God talks more about matters and things related to matters of money in it than he does heaven and hell. And everybody always asks me, hey, you got any great tips? Do you got any way I can make money? And I always answer the same way. Yeah, it's called tithing. And those of you that benefit from Relevant Radio, which I know you do because you're listening, we're called to tithe. We need to support things like Relevant Radio, our parishes and all. And even if we can't do it from a financial standpoint, we need to find a way through sweat equity or something. And my friend Bill Wagner was the great teacher of that for me.
Wow.
And I'm so grateful that I knew him.
Well, Peter, I am so sorry for your loss. I could hear it in your voice and in your beautiful words. I just want to thank you, too, for your message of tithing. It challenges, I know, many people. It challenges me. As I hear that, I mean, that reminder is so important for so many people. We can't outgive God, that's for sure. And that's one spiritual principle that we'll be evaluated on when we stand before Him. And, you know, you say hundreds of years from now. Look, you know, 50 years from now, most of us will all be gone. Maybe 100 for sure, right? And life is very short. We don't know the day or the hour that God's going to call us home. My producer Tom's daughter was only in her early 30s. She was 32 years of age and within 3 weeks was taken home by a very aggressive cancer. So to your point, you know, live the moment for God because we're going to want to be with Him for all eternity. Peter, thank you for being here. Let's catch up again soon, okay? It's always great to talk with you.
Thank you, as always, Drew. God bless, and to Tom and his family, my deepest condolences.
You got it. It's Peter Grandage. Say a prayer for him as well. All right? Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thank you for joining me. Coming up in about 10 minutes or so, we'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. Let me just give you a quick heads up. If you want to join us, here's the number. It's 888-914-9149. I know the phone lines fill up pretty quickly, and it's often hard to get in. Feel free to do that. You can always leave your petition at our Twitter account, at Drew Mariani Show. And, you know, Patrick or whoever I'll be praying with will try to share some of those intentions with you today. So, look, I just want you to say a prayer for Peter. I really enjoy the man. I love his honesty. And he's been transformed by Relevant, as so many different lives have. I was away from the mic, not yesterday, but the day before. I shared with you the story of the passing of my producer's daughter. She's a twin sister, and I spoke to her sister, Anna, today. And how hard it is for this girl to lose her sibling, who she spent 32 years with. And they were literally inseparable. I mean, my producer said, hey, for about 3 years, that's about 36 months. That's all they've ever been really apart. It's like losing a spouse. So I'd gone out the day that she was passing to pray with the family and just to offer support for him. The next day, I was getting ready to head back to the studio. That was Rochester, Minnesota. I had to make my way back to Chicago, and I had driven out there. A friend of mine took me by what I didn't realize, but it's the only Catholic coffee shop in the country that has the Eucharist. It had the true presence of our Lord there, and they do a radio broadcast out of there. I went in. It's called the St. James Coffee Shop. I'll put a quick plug in for it, and if you want to learn more about it, stjamescoffee.com, stjamescoffee.com. They'll tell you their story. It's an extension of the new evangelization. What they really want to do is to have a place where they can bring in speakers and where they can allow others. In fact, when I was sitting there having my coffee that morning, there was a group of women right behind me. They're having a Bible study or something along those lines, some sort of book club. I thought it was pretty cool. But I got the chance to talk to a beautiful young lady who was behind the counter. And she says, I've listened to you for years. And I guess she caught us on the app. I said, oh, really? How'd you find Relevant Radio? And she shared her story with me. And look, you never know how God, you know, we pray for conversion, don't we? We pray all the time for those that we love or those who may be away from the faith. Those prayers have an effect. I'd like to bring onto the conversation today Melissa Scacheo. She is a mother, I think, of five children, I want to say. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But so we had a conversation about Catholic schools and how she has really chose to sacrifice in order to send her kids there. Then I asked her about her own conversion, and you'll love the story. And she joins me right now. Hey, Melissa, good to talk with you. Thanks for your hospitality yesterday, and thanks for being here today.
Oh no, it was great to meet you, Drew, in person. Like you said, you're taller than I thought you were going to be.
Yeah, it's so funny when people see me. I didn't realize you're so tall. I didn't realize everybody has a different vision of somebody's voice when they hear it on the air. Hey, I love your story, and I said when I heard it, I thought you've got to share it with everyone else. So let me just share with everyone how you came to the faith and ultimately how you discovered Relevant Radio and where you are now, because I know you're on fire for the faith. You're a great mother and you understand the importance of Catholic education.
Oh, well, thanks, Drew. I grew up a cradle Catholic, a family of six, my mom and my dad. We were front pew at Mass every single Sunday. And my parents would also, they'd teach faith formation. And I remember my dad telling people all the time, you should listen to Relevant Radio. And I, as a teenager, would just roll my eyes and be like, what a dork. Like, my dad is such a geek. He listens to Catholic radio. Like, how could that be good in any way, shape, or form? And just I kept going to Mass because I knew I should, but the catechesis back then, not so great. I really didn't know much about my faith. And so about 2004, I graduated college and I got married. I got married to a guy that was an atheist. And he had three children already, and they came to live with us. And then we had three in quick succession in 3 years. And we made a move from La Crosse, Wisconsin to Rochester, and I just quit going to church. It wasn't important. It wasn't important to my husband. He preferred I not go. And the questions came up, should we baptize the kids? And his answer was no. And we moved to Rochester, and there are several Catholic parishes here, and I didn't know what to choose. I didn't know where to go. I was working on the weekends. And before I knew it, 4 years was gone, and I hadn't been to Mass even one time. And it's incredible how time just disappears. And I wouldn't say I ever left the faith. I didn't understand it really to begin with, but I became too busy for it. And I think that really busyness is way worse of a pandemic than we've just lived through, because busyness keeps us away from God. And then I was a geneticist at Mayo Clinic here in town. And probably, it was about late 2008, early 2009, I was sitting in my cubicle with my microscope and my computer, and a girl sitting behind me at work suggested I start going back to Mass. And the idea of that was really overwhelming, because I'm like, how am I going to have time? I work on Saturdays. I work on Sundays. How am I going to find a church? And she gave me a set of Father Carapi CDs on the Easter Triduum, and I listened to them, and just something inside me changed. I had a fire. There was this hunger, and I'm like, how is there so much I didn't know? I didn't even know that Jesus was in the Eucharist, the real presence. And I'm like, if I didn't know that, how much more is there that I didn't know? And way back then, back in the Stone Ages, iPod touches became a thing, and I had just gotten one. And the same girl that encouraged me to start going to Mass told me that Relevant Radio had an app I could download. So I was, and she's like, you can get a ton of stuff on here. So I downloaded the app and started listening. And normally I would listen to like books on CDs or music while I was sitting in my cubicle. And all of a sudden, the only thing I was listening to was Relevant Radio. And I couldn't get enough of it. I couldn't wait to get to work so I could tune in and just learn and just take in all of the things that I'd been missing all of those years. So like Father Rocky was on there, like you were on there, Patrick Madrid, Morning Air. I discovered Bishop Fulton Sheen and The Life is Worth Living that they would syndicate on the weekends. Just for months, all I did was listen. And finally, I decided, I'm like, all right, I've got to go back to Mass. Like, I've just got to get back. So I chose a church. I just talked to some people. And went back to Mass, and I remember I sat there and I cried for like 2 hours. And I'm like, where have I been? Like, I've been missing this for so long. It was like going home. Amen. And my husband, not happy about that, far preferred our life without God and without church and things. So I started going to Mass in secret every Sunday.
Wow.
I would either make up excuses to go or I would work on Sundays and combine all my breaks together, and I would clock out and go to Mass and come back. And that went on for at least a year or so. And then something happened, and one of my stepsons got kicked out of the public schools. And I convinced my husband to put the kids in the Catholic schools.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you what, Melissa, hold the thought, okay? We'll come back. I have to pray the chaplet coming up, but let's hear the rest of your story right after I return, okay? My guest today, Melissa Scheschel, you can join us for the chaplet. We'll pray for her as well. One of the great converts back to the faith. And in large part, thanks to Relevant Radio.